first, a tiny social studies lesson. We tend to use the words nation and state interchangeably when we talk, but they're not actually the same thing.
A state is a territorially defined unit in which there is authority to make rules and regulations over a population that lives within that territory. A state has nothing to do with the ethnic, cultural, or ideology of the people within it. A nation is a population that sees itself as an imagined community of people like themselves, and they want to be and think of themselves as a kind of metaphoric family.
That's Stanford political scientist David Layton. Steve Paulson asked him why, in this age of globalization, people all over the world seem to want their very own state.
David, there was a really interesting poll that just came out quite recently where 24% of Americans said they supported the idea of their state seceding from the United States. I mean, a quarter of Americans supporting secession, which seems incredibly high to me. Does that number surprise you?
Ever since maybe 125 years ago, one political scientist described the world phenomenon as the incredibly shrinking state. The size of states in the world, on average, has been declining with more and more secessions, so that the size of a state in world history reached its peak in 1895, and it's now incredibly smaller and getting smaller every year. So it's not surprising there are more and more claims for separation from large states.
Now, that's interesting, and yet we just had that vote in Scotland where the Scots voted to stay within the UK by a strong 10%.
Yes, it's very difficult to get the what we call in political science the median voter to support it. But the fact that 45% of the population was willing to separate from the UK is incredibly higher than it was, say, 20 years ago. So the trend is towards a desire for autonomy, political autonomy, and their own state.
That's interesting. So you think we'll see more of this, and we will see more efforts by particular groups to break away from larger states?
The key to understand this is that in the past 100 years, the probability, well, let's say the past 50 years, the probability of an interstate war has gone way, way down, which means that any of these new states, whether it's Slovakia or, let's say, Catalonia one day, would not have to build its own army, because the likelihood that there would be a war between Catalonia and the rest of Spain is about zero. If Quebec were to separate from Canada, the probability of a war between Quebec and the rest of Canada is practically zero. So the cost of separation has gone way down because you don't have to defend your borders against international attacks. So as the cost goes down, the opportunity goes up.
So why are we seeing all of these independence movements? Why do so many people want to break away from the mother state?
Let's just say that there's always a constant feeling that if you share culturally with a neighboring population that's territorially defined, there is a lingering latent feeling that it would be great to have your own state. And so that lingering feeling has been there for a long time. What's changed is the opportunity. That is, with more democratic states and people able to vote their way out, or with collapsing large states, as with the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia, the opportunities have increased. So in the sense, you can say the sentiment may not have gone that much greater, but the opportunities have.
Okay, well, let's play this out. I know you have studied the nationalist movement in Catalonia, which is pushing for breaking away from Spain. Suppose Catalonia did become independent. I mean, what would they gain? What would they lose?
Let's take a step back on that and say, in the world of the European Union, in the world of free trade, Catalonia doesn't need Spain anymore. It doesn't need protection for its markets. So in a sense, the need for Spain has been reduced. Meanwhile, the opportunities, if Catalonia were to separate, then it would have no problem getting into the European Union. It would have no problem using the euro as its currency. So the losses are very few. I would say the gains are very few as well. One of the odd things about the desired separation of Esquerra Republicana in Catalonia is that this is a policy that unites the left and the right in Catalonia. They all agree that it would be great to be independent. But if they got independence, suddenly the left and the right would be against each other, and it would lead to conflicts that they have never had. They can all agree on Barca and independence.
Now, is the fact that Catalonians have their own language, is that the most important thing here? I mean, is that what sort of binds the Catalonian people together? Or I assume it's also a distinct history that's somewhat separate from the rest of Spain?
So the Catalans do rely a lot on the linguistic difference. So, as you probably know, Franco tried his best to eliminate the Catalan language from daily life, made it illegal to be used publicly, which in a sense helped unite Catalans in having night lessons in the Catalan language. So it became one of the key elements of their national culture that helped bind them together. But you don't actually need a language to have a movement like this, as we see in Scotland with a language which is effectively dead, the Gaelic language, and yet it still had a high degree of solidarity of people who consider themselves Scots.
I want to step back for a moment and talk about the nation state in itself, because in some ways this seems almost like an archaic institution. I mean, given the forces of globalization in the world right now, do we still need nation states?
I think we still need states, but the relationship of nations and states is becoming quite different from 100 years ago. That it was once considered, say, in the classic works of Europe in the mid-19th century, one historian, Eugen Weber, pointed out, something like 40% of the people living in Marseille couldn't understand the words of Marseillaise. But by the end of the Third Republic, virtually everyone within the hexagon of France saw French as their native language. This was the assimilatory power of an educational system, of a railroad system, and a military conscription system that basically turned all people within the hexagon into Frenchmen. In the world we live in today, without conscription, with a great deal of ability of regional groups to demand autonomy and democratically achieve it, we're getting to the case that more countries are getting to look like India, countries where different regions, there are different official languages.
So where does globalization fit into this?
So globalization fits in to what I consider one of the vast economic changes that lowers the cost of independence. So in other words, if the Catalans were to break from the Spanish state, that the forces of globalization mean that companies who are operating in Barcelona will still operate in Barcelona. They don't have a deal with the Spanish state. They are able to move wherever they think they can make the most profit. If Catalonia lowers its tax rate for businesses, they may even get more attractive entries of large-scale business. So in other words, forces of globalization make the size of the unit, the protective size of the unit, which used to be economically beneficial, no longer economically beneficial. You can be a very viable state with the size of Singapore.
But it seems like one other way of looking at the state now is, in a sense, it is a hedge against the power of corporate globalization. Globalization is not just running rampant because individual states still have regulatory power.
This is one of the arguments that the political entrepreneurs who are pushing nationalist agendas, this is the kind of argument they make. They say the ideal preference for a Catalan in terms of regulation of international business is different from the ideal point of the median Spanish voter. And therefore, you can get regulatory state much closer to your own ideal, the more homogeneous and smaller the community.
So in your ideal world, do we have more states out there? I mean, do these larger states sort of keep splitting up into smaller states that, you know, have more, I don't know, coherence?
I don't think there's a big normative issue of a better world with more states. I'm not a supporter of Catalan nationalism. I don't think the world would be better if there were a Catalan state. I'm just trying to understand what it is that impels people, if I can be ironic here for a moment, to push for a language and the development of a language which would increase the communicative capacity of the population by zero. There's no more communication that you could have with anyone in the world by speaking Catalan. Everyone in Catalonia speaks Spanish. In a sense, from a normative point of view, there's no sort of ideal point of the number of states or the number of languages. However, as a Democrat, my norms say if the majority of the people in Catalonia desire to have a separate state that represents their nation and they do not oppress minorities, then we should have granted to them. That's part of the democratic process.
Mm-hmm. Now, my sense is that there is this assumption, true or not, I don't know, that to some degree, if you look back at the history of the world, civilization is bound up with the creation of nation states. I mean, that's sort of partly, you know, how we got to where we are today. Is that a fair thing, a fair way to look at the sweep of history?
It's only in the early 20th century the idea that the nation and the state were commensurate became accepted. So if we're only living in that world for, say, 100 years now, there's every reason to think that the nation state will no longer be the dominant form of political organization in the next 100 years.
David Layton is a political scientist at Stanford University. Steve Paulson talked with him.